Rabbi Eisberg, have a seat. I'm sure as you know already, and having Rabbi Eisberg as a teacher, is that he is a master at weaving together different ideas. And so Rabbi Eisberg now is tasked with our theme, and Shabbos, Esther Batavis got in there, Esther Batavis, right? And I said, okay, Rabbi, here's all the pieces, tie it up together for us, okay?
Good narrative Shabbos. Okay, so I guess we have to start with the Servativis then. I'll try to remember all the other points he mentioned. Servativis. So, fasting today. It's an interesting one, right? It doesn't typically feel like the mourning over the Beis HaMikdash season. We're in the winter, just got out of Hanukkah. When are we thinking more consciously about the Beis HaMikdash and the Korban?
The summer.
Tisha B'Av, right? When was the Beis HaMikdash destroyed? Tisha B'Av. Okay, so we have Tisha B'Av, of course. We have 3 weeks of mourning, of focusing on that. What happened on Shiva Shabbat Tammuz?
The
walls of Yerushalayim were breached. So Shiva Shabbat Tammuz was when the walls of Yerushalayim were breached, and for 3 weeks, the enemies were in Yerushalayim, and then they destroyed the Beis HaMikdash on Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av was the day, both times the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. And that's what we mourn for, and that's when we feel it more. We're more in tune. Aser B'Teves is it's different. What happened on Aser B'Teves? Someone already started to mention something. They laid siege, right? We also mentioned this in class. There was a siege against Jerusalem. That means that the enemies, in particular Nebuchadnezzar, his army, surrounded the walls of Jerusalem. And they threatened to come in, and they said, "We're coming in. We're going to huff and puff and blow the walls, and we're going to get in there." And they intimidated them, and they scared them, and that's what happened on Aser B'Teves. And then, about two and a half years later, they finally broke through on Shiva Aser B'Tammuz, and then on Tisha B'Av, they destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. So, it would seem that it's enough to have the 3 weeks. That's really a time where we think about it. Why do we need Aser B'Teves? Don't even get me started on Sof Gedalia. Why do we need Aser B'Teves? Because they laid siege? Okay, we have another time for that. And even more, it's a unique fast, especially the way our calendar is set up. We're fasting on a Friday. In general, the Gemara brings in the Gemara Maseches Tanis, says that you're not supposed to fast on a Friday. Friday is not a day for fasting. This is the one day that falls out on Friday, and it's Aser B'Teves. It's an important one, so we fast even on a Friday, even on an Erev Shabbos. I'm just going to up the ante a little bit more. There's a region known as the Avud Raham. Maybe you've heard about this. The Avud Raham has a very mind-blowing opinion that he says that, in general, when a fast falls out on Shabbos, what do we typically do? If it's a rabbinical fast. If it's Yom Kippur, of course, it's a Deraisa. We fast on Shabbos. But otherwise, we push it off. Either we make it earlier, if it's time of Esther, you eat Shiva Shabbat Thomas. Tisha B'Av falls out on Shabbos, we push it off.
Meaning
we don't fast on Shabbos for a rabbinical fast day, even if the Nevi'im told us about these holidays, these fast days. The Avud Raham says that if Aser B'Teves would fall out on Shabbos, you would fast on Shabbos. Aser B'Teves? If Tisha B'Av falls out on Shabbos, we don't fast on Shabbos. And if Aser B'Teves would fall out on Shabbos, that's hard to understand. Now, practically, it doesn't make so much difference because the Beis Yosef does quote this of Udram, but we don't hold like it lahalacha. And even more practically, the way our calendar is arranged, Aser B'Teves cannot fall out on Shabbos. So, halacha l'maisa, we're not going to fast on Shabbos ever because of Aser B'Teves. But just that thought, he would say such a thing. There's clearly something we're missing about Aser B'Teves. There's something we're missing. What is it about Aser B'Teves? What's going on Aser B'Teves? That's question number one. Another question, Parshas Vayigash. We have the big reveal. Tzafnas Paneach, Viceroy, Mishnah L'melech, leader, a leader, for boots on the ground leader in Egypt. And the brothers think they're dealing with this evil viceroy taking advantage of them, framing them. And of course, the big reveal says, I am Yosef. Is my father still alive? Ani Yosef. O Davi Chai. Is my father still alive? He reveals himself. Everyone's shocked. Oh my goodness. Dumbstruck. They don't know how to respond to him. And then Yosef, he comes closer. He says, don't worry, I'm not upset. Hashem arranges this way. It's all shkacha. Don't worry, it's all good. I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to provide for you. And then Yosef, he hugs and kisses his brothers. But the pasuk says something interesting of what says by Binyamin. When he reaches Binyamin, so they hug, they kiss, and they're crying over each other's necks. Now, if I would ask you, why are they crying? What would you tell me? It's a very emotional scene. Right? Maybe many of you have seen videos just in these last few days from Eretz Yisrael about families reuniting. It's a very emotional thing. I would expect these two brothers who are separated for 22 years, they're full brothers, living one as a stranger in Egypt with no family, and the other one living as a half-brother to all his other brothers and out of the group, and for them to be reunited, I would expect it to be very emotional for them to cry. So if I would ask you, that's what you would tell me. But I'm not asking you. If I would ask Rashi, he would tell me something else. Rashi puts a Gemara in the Sechus Megillah. It's also a Midrash in Gracious Rabbah that says, you know why they were crying? They were crying over each other's necks. Does anybody know?
Something that the face of the Mikdash would be destroyed on the Sabbath.
Excellent. Yes. Perfect. Right? So Binyamin, when he was hugging and crying, he was hugging and kissing Yosef, he saw the Ruach HaKodesh. He sensed, flickered within him, that in Yosef's portion, what is going to go to the children of Yosef is a city called Shiloh. And the city called Shiloh would house the Mishkan for many years. Mishkan in the Midbar traveled around a lot. Once it got to Eretz Yisrael, it traveled very little. And it spent a lot of time in Shiloh. And there was a Hurban of the Mishkan in Shiloh. And Binyamin sensed that, and he started to cry over that. And Yosef, when he was hugging Binyamin, he sensed in Binyamin's portion there's going to be a very, very important building, the most important building known as the Beis HaMikdash. And the Beis HaMikdash is going to stand in Binyamin's portion, and it's going to be destroyed. And it's going to be rebuilt, and then again destroyed. And Yosef was so torn up by that, he started crying. And this is what they're crying over the Chorban Mishkan, Chorban HaBayis. And so you wonder, why did Chazal have to say this? Where did they get this from? And that's a separate discussion of what they saw in the text and what Masorah they had to tell us that this is the case. And we accept what Chazal said in Emunah Shleima. But a different question we can ask on this as well is, why are they crying about this now? They had years together before they went down to Mitzrayim. They were going to have many other years. And right now, you would expect all the emotion to be really just raw emotion. It's a very heavy scene. Not to be thinking about other things at the time. Maybe at some point later, 5 years down the line, 10 years down the line, they're sitting at a tish, an Onik Shabbos Friday night, and then all of a sudden they hug and then they sense it. Oh my goodness, wow, that's what's going to happen. They start crying. Maybe you would expect that. But at this moment, the first time seeing each other, it never happened before, and Chazal don't tell us what happens after. They're crying over the Chorban and each other's, what's going on? One more question. Theme of the Shabbaton. You know what the theme is yet? Okay. Right. So theme is, Im ein ani li, mi li. If I am not for myself, who will be for me? This is one of these many gems of wisdom from our Masorah that the outside veldt has accepted. It's one of these pearls of wisdom. Many of them are from Pirkei Avos. I once actually, I was eating a fortune cookie and opened up, read the fortune, and it said, who is wise? He who learns from every man. Right?
You know, did it quote?
What?
Did it not.
And I derived from this, amazing. Confucius must have sat in shir of Ben Zoma, because that's in Pirkei Avos, Perek Dal, Mishnah Aleph. Right? Ezehu chacham halomei mikol adam. Who is wise? He who learns from every man. Amazing. Wow. Confucius is a Talmud. Confucius is a Talmud of Ben Zoma. Wow. Okay. So, where was I? Okay, anyway, I was actually thinking of even marketing Pirkei Avos fortune cookies. Isn't that a beautiful idea? Maybe we'll talk to the Fedra down across the hall at Dunwell Kosher, and the Chinese cookies. What's that? Pirkei Avos fortune cookies. Anyway, another line that I would expect at some point in my life, Mir Tzol Shem, should be Zoche, to see in a fortune cookie is, if I am not for myself, then who will be for me? And that's one of those lines that would make it. But let's just look at the next part of the Mishnah. Now, we're not going to fully go in. Right? The next part of the Mishnah says, if I'm only for myself, if I'm for myself, then what am I? Maybe that's the theme of next Shabbaton, we'll speak about it then, I don't know. But we're not going to focus on that. It seems to be simply, right, if I'm not for myself, who will be for me? I need to take care of myself. I need to get my stuff together. The contrast is, if I'm only taking care of myself, I'm not taking care of others, then there's something lacking. What's the third part of that Mishnah? V'lo achshav, ein masai. Mazel tov davar kelman. So I guess he took his own advice, right? He made an achshav. Right? V'lo achshav, ein masai, sai, sai. So what is this? If not now, when? This is a beautiful pearl of wisdom. It's a gem. If not now, when? You'll explain it after. It's fine. If not now, when? That's important. That's valuable. It's beautiful. And we'll make a great song, and actually has made many. But what does that have to do with the other parts of the Mishnah? It seems like the Mishnah was being presented as a set, right? If I'm only for myself, who will be for me? If I'm not for myself, who will be for me? If I'm only for myself, then what am I? I have to be concerned about others. If not now, when? Just throw one more in there. It looks like the Mishnah could have been written down with that. Why would Hillel put in Lo Achshav Ein Masai? What does that have to do with the first two parts of the Mishnah? Okay, so let's do a little bit of Hazara. There's three questions. First of all, Asara Bateves, what's going on with Asara Bateves? Why is it such a, why is it a day any at all to have on the calendar? And definitely, why does it have so much significance? We're going to fast even on an Erev Shabbos. Over terms of, do you even fast on Shabbos for it? Asara Bateves? Why are Yosef and Binyamin crying over the Churban HaBayis and the Churban HaMishkan when they're reuniting after 22 years? And what does Imlo Achshav Ein Masai have to do with the Mishnah of Imein Ani Lemi? So there's three questions. Asara Bateves, Vayigash, and the Shabbaton theme. So I think to answer the question, we have to think a little bit about this first line, Imein Ani Lemi. And so the Pashat Pshat would seem to be, the simple understanding is the way that you find it in a fortune cookie and the way that the Mefarshei fortune cookie would explain it, much of the secular world, right? They would say, if you don't take care of yourself, no one's going to do it. At some point in your life, at some point, you may not be there yet, at some point in your life, if you forget to make your lunch, you're not eating lunch today. I'm not eating lunch today. It happens before breakfast. Fast day. Right? At some point, if you don't fill out your forms, they're not going to be filled out. At some point in your life, you will need to do things yourself. It may not be me. However, if you look at the Mefarshim, in the Mishnayos, the classical Mefarshim, they really explain it differently, a whole different layer. Rashi, Rambam, Rabbeinu Yonah, Rabbi Bar Tanura, they all seem to explain it in a different context. They say, not that it's not talking about the simple way we understood it, but they really only explain it as in the spiritual sense. That if you don't arouse yourself for your Avodas Hashem, no one's going to arouse it for you. If you don't build your Olam Haba, yourself, no one could do that for you. Because the truth is, I think this chat really, you can see how it's emistic, because there are some people who are actually coddled their entire lives, and all their physical needs are always provided for them, always, always, and forever. You have some people like that, that really, there's always going to be someone making their lunch and filling out their forms. You have people like that. But you know what's impossible? It's impossible for someone else to build your Olam Haba for you. If you will not be for yourselves in regards to your Olam Haba, who will be for you? Answer, no one. That you have to do yourselves. Now, Baruch Hashem, everyone here is really blessed, tremendously blessed to grow up in the homes that you've grown up in, to be in this tremendous space Yaakov that you're a part of, that's nurturing, that provides you with the skills, with the hashkafos that you need to be a Yerei Shamayim in today's world. It's a big bracha. It's a tremendous bracha. But there's also a little bit of a curse in it. And that little bit of a curse is that we may become complacent, but even worse than complacent, we may think that, you know, we're actually doing very well in the Avodas Hashem relative to the rest of the world. Look at us. Look what we're doing. You know, we to the best of my ability, I keep halacha. I sell Lashon Hara much less than that girl. Trust me, she tells a lot of Lashon Hara, let me tell you. I'm doing pretty well. Me as an individual, as my family, as my community, as my Beis Yaakov, we're doing pretty well. spiritually. But the question is, how much of that is really you? And how much of that was just handed on a silver platter? You didn't choose your family. Could be you chose your Beis Yaakov. Could be your parents had a lot of input. You didn't choose your schools when you were younger, for sure not. You didn't choose the community you lived in. You didn't choose your co-host that Hashem gave you. These are all gifts. And most of the decisions that were made in your life have not really been made by you. Probably more recently, you're starting to make your own. And as you get older, you're going to be making much more on your own. But much of what you've accomplished, of where you're standing, your spiritual standing, is not something that you actually built for yourselves. Now, many times it is. Many times you chose properly. And many times it's not. But you can't rely on somebody else building your Olam Haba for you. That's a dangerous thing. Now, I'll give you a mashal. Imagine that there's an investor you're speaking to. You're trying to start a business. The investor says, you know what? You seem like an intelligent young woman. You seem responsible. You seem honest. I'm going to trust you. I'm going to give you a $10,000 loan. Come back to me in 5 years. And let's see what you did. 5 years later, you come back and you walk up to that investor. You say, sir, here you go. I have counted up. Every single one of the $10,000 is here. Amazing. Okay, perfect. See, I told you you could trust me. I didn't touch it. Right when you gave it to me, I was so responsible. I took it, I put it in the bank, and then I locked up the bank, and I made sure that no one would ever see it. I threw away the key, and no one was able to touch these $10,000 for all 5 years until today when I bring it back to you. How did I do, sir? Obviously, you failed. Because he didn't give it to you for you to accomplish nothing. He gave you the $10,000 to get $20,000, $30,000, $100,000, $1,000,000, and then you just pay back the $10,000 that he invested in you. So you actually think, you didn't walk out with $10,000. How much did you walk out with?
Zero.
So everything that you're given as a gift in your Avodas Hashem is just a gift. If you grew up keeping kashrus, and it was never a challenge for you, and never a thought for you, and then if that's all you walk out with, then you don't have anything. You walk up after an investment, and you didn't build anything. You didn't build a world for yourself. You didn't build anything. Right? If all your inspiration, if you look at that, when you're 40, 50, 60, and you say, oh, the last time I felt that I was inspired and growing was when I was in high school, or I was in seminary, and that was like the peak of my spiritual growth. That's failing. When everyone provides it for you, when they provide the Shabbatons and the environments for you, and the Word Watch, and the GO, and the Mokos, and whatever else is going on to help you with your Avodas Hashem, this is a gift to you, for you to take that and own that and build your own world. Because the Mogos aren't going to be with you forever, even if you're a Mogo. You won't be a Mogo. I don't know if it's a Mogo in my society. But you won't be a Mogo forever, and you're not going, and hopefully, Bezos Hashem. Bezos Hashem, you'll have the opportunity to be in touch with your teachers and your mentors and your uncles and everybody beyond. But at a certain point, you're going to be on your own, and you have to make sure that you're setting yourself up for success and that you didn't reach your peak of Avodas Hashem at this young age where everything is provided for you. You need to build for yourself. And when do you need to do that? Right away. Right away. Think Imloach Shavei Masai. It's not a separate gem. It's a commentary on Imayani Limili. It's, I need to be for myself, and I need to do it now. Because if I don't start now, I'm not going to wake up until it's too late. It costs a shame to wake up when it's too late. To wake up and you're 45, and oh my gosh, I realize I haven't grown in 20 years. I haven't grown spiritually at least in 20 years. Right? Likely, people grow in 20 years. Right? If I'm not going to grow spiritually in 20 years, I haven't grown. And it's not too late then, but it's kind of too late then. We don't want to wait till it's too late. You know what the tragedy of Asar B'Teves is? There was a siege. You know what that means? How many people were killed?
None.
Assume not, none. How many buildings were set on fire?
Zero.
Three.
Okay. The siege is that they're outside the walls of Yerushalayim, waiting, playing the waiting game. It took 2.5 years before they broke through the walls of Shivasar Batamas. And the tragedy is that they looked out the window. Oh, look at that. Look over the wall. Look at that army around us. Huh? You got a strong wall. Instead of saying, there's an opposing army, and they're too powerful for us, so what should we do?
Tshuva.
Chazal tells very clearly. Chazal says, you know why the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed? It does not say because Nebuchadnezzar was a really tough guy. You know what it says? Because they were over on Gilui Reis, because Dan Levod Azar. They were doing Averos. The second Beis HaMikdash doesn't say because the Romans were really, really tough. We know they were. This doesn't matter. It says because of Sinas Chinam. That's why the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. That means that the answer is not being tougher and working out more. The answer is tshuva. And the tragedy of Asara Bet Heves is that it wasn't too late. If you find yourself in the summer and you're already mourning and you're already right in the middle of the summer when we're supposed to be having a great time listening to music, going swimming, enjoying, and if you're already mourning on Shiva Asara Bet Heves, it's already kind of too late in a sense. If you're already experiencing the 3 weeks, if you're already experiencing that mourning, it's too late. You know when you should have woken up? Asara Bet Heves. Asara Bet Heves was the wake-up call. Do tshuva before it gets bad. And unfortunately, we didn't learn our lesson then. Yosef and Binyamin, at the time of reunion, after having disunity for 20 years, because of sinah and kinah, hatred and jealousy, the brothers were separated for 22 years. And now that they're being reunited, in this moment of reunion, when things are right now good, that's the time to start thinking, let's never lose this. How tragic would a Chorban be after we just experienced our house was a Chorban for 22 years? For 22 years, our house was a Chorban, our home was a Chorban, our father was a mess. He had no Ruach HaKodesh during this time. We didn't know what was with Yosef. 22 years of a Chorban, and now finally there's a reunion. This is the time to think, how do we make sure this doesn't happen again? Let's cry over a future Chorban and make sure this doesn't happen again before it's too late. Because Im L'Achshav, Eim Asai. If you don't do it now, when are you going to do it? You know, looking at what took place on Masorah on October 7th. So some might look and say, okay, you know, it was too late. Like maybe there were warnings. Maybe we didn't learn the lesson before. But I want to think forward. We don't know what's next. With Mughal Etzlan. What our enemies are threatening, what's next, Chas V'Shalom? Yimach Shemam V'Zichron, Gufam. But you know what else could be next? Binyan Bayis Shlishi could be next. It could be that in just a few months from now, after your finals, and you're in the summer, Shiva sometimes could be a Yontif. Why not? You could have 3 weeks of Chol HaMoed, and Tisha B'Av is the last day of Yontif. Before finals. Right? But don't wait till the summer to then think about the Beis HaMikdash and think about tshuva, and don't wait until Chas V'Shalom our enemies should not be able to accomplish anything, but until they try their evil, awful plots. Don't wait till that. Right now we're being woken up. We've been woken up. Asara Bet Heves wakes us up. Parshas Vayikash wakes us up, and the Shabbaton wakes us up. You have the opportunity. Often there's no sleeping on a Shabbaton, right? Shabbaton. You know, some might say, okay, Shabbaton starting a Asara Bet Heves, not so geschmack. I don't get my pizza. It's perfect, because now you're woken up to tshuva. Hopefully, I'm also woken up to tshuva. That when we enter Shabbos, we'll try to take advantage. That there's going to be parts of the Shabbaton where you're going to hear from amazing speakers, and there's going to be inspiring singing and all kinds of wonderful things that you're so blessed to have Mrs. Spear program for you. And it's amazing. And all of that is more of the what's handed to you on a silver platter. And the question is, what are you going to do with that? How are you going to say, this is the gift I was given, but I'm going to use it and build my Olam Haba for myself? That in the downtime in the Shabbaton, how am I going to use that to inspire myself? After the Shabbaton, how am I going to use that to inspire myself and build up layers and deepen my avodas Hashem? Because no one's going to do it for you. Nobody can do it for you. If you're not going to be for yourselves, no one's going to be for you. And if you don't do it now, you might never do it. Make sure you're asking yourself these questions. Honestly, you need to look in the mirror and ask yourself these questions. Ask yourself, Im lo achshavei masai, and Im ein ani li mili. Good job, John.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry.
Thank you.